Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment. Shabbat Shalom. Of all of the feelings I've experienced these past few weeks, as my oldest daughter graduated from high school, pride, nachas, wistful nostalgia, profound gratitude, and overwhelming love. The one emotion I did not count on and have felt most deeply is that of panic. Panic. The uncontrollable fear or anxiety that one can feel anytime or anywhere, but oftentimes feels at moments of transition, when one chapter closes and another one opens, when the ground shifts from beneath us, when the known is replaced by the unknown. We stare into that unfamiliar future and we seize up and we look for an escape hatch. We grab onto things for control, and like a basketball player watching the second clock tick down, we call for a timeout, whether we have one left or not, and we search desperately for some intervention by which we can make the inevitable less inevitable. From the outside, with only a few notable exceptions, these last few weeks appeared to be business as usual. I've clocked into work, attended end of the year thank yous, community dinners, given a sermon or two, and maybe even forwarded the mission of this institution in my own small way. But on the inside, from the senior dinner to graduation to prom to putting my kid on a plane yesterday, I've been an absolute wreck. And at the epicenter of it all, this colossal, pulsating, and relentless sensation of panic. At risk of bearing my soul even further, I want to explore the foundations of my panic with you. The sources of my angst at the launching of this young woman, this child of mine, who both in my eyes and I think objectively in the eyes of anyone, is a spectacular combination of brains, beauty, and character, well poised to perform the task of leaving home, which not an insignificant number of people have actually done successfully many times before, with far fewer arrows in their quiver than she has. It's my first to leave the nest, of course, but why am I panicked so? To begin with, I think I'm panicked because these last few weeks or months have been akin to those desperate moments at the end of an exam, once a teacher has called time and is hovering over your desk, ready to snatch your handiwork. You frantically review your math or you scribble down the final sentences, knowing that once that blue book is handed in, the deal is done. In the case of this particular blue book, well, I've been working on it for 18 years. Time has been called, and I need to hand it in to that proctor called the world, and I know that there's still yet ground to cover. Second, and here I need to tread lightly because there's so much about my child about which I'm genuinely proud, I am panicked because I'm wholly confident that there is still quite a bit that needs yet to be done. I watch that kid hand in forms last minute at deadline. I see the condition by which she leaves her bedroom, and I'm panicked at the thought of whether she is game ready for the world that awaits her. It doesn't help, mind you, not one bit, that my wife is quick to point out that pretty much every habit of hers that grates upon me, she got from me. A sermon, no doubt, for another day. But none of that mitigates the undeniable fact that she still is a work in progress. Multiple times these last months, I've caught myself helicoptering in, or more precisely, diving in, kamikaze-like, into the affairs of my child, impelled by the certitude that she is not yet ready for this thing called life. Multiple times I've caught myself intervening, sometimes too late, prompted by the incredulous thought that this kid, who still needs to be reminded to set her alarm clock, will prove able to demonstrate the requisite life skills to navigate the world that awaits her. Third, and by extension, and most importantly, I suppose I know that this moment of panic is really not about her, but it's about me. It's not that I want her to stay home. I've never found myself moved by people who reflect on how fast time flies, how kids grow up in the blink of an eye, and how we have to cherish and hold on to every second. I think 18 years is plenty. But I do think that my panic is about loss of control, about the thing in this world that I love most, my children, going out into the world, making decisions for themselves, charting their own paths, falling down, failing, and setting boundaries between themselves and the home that gave them life. When I think about it, when I really think about it, I think that my panic is rooted in the difficult task of letting go, of allowing for the possibility that my kid will have to make choices for herself, figure things out on her own, and develop into her own person. You know, one could read the tale of this week's Haftorah, the tale of Samson, as just another chapter in the cyclical history of ancient Israel as found in the book of Judges. You could also choose to see the story of the mighty Samson as sort of an idealized folk hero. But given the fact that the focus of the Haftorah that Sam chanted is not actually on the exploits of Samson's life, but on the birth story that brought Samson into the world, I'm inclined to believe that the intent of the rabbis was to direct our attention to the domestic aspects of Samson's life and character, to his relationship with his father and mother. Because while at first blush we may think of Samson as some sort of masculine ideal of great strength, long hair, virility, and heroic deeds, on a closer read, and I encourage you to read these four chapters of the book of Judges on your own, you'll discover that Samson is anything but the ubermensch we would have him to be. The story of Samson is actually the story of a failed passing of the intergenerational baton, the failed effort of a parent and child to let go of each other and to get to the nub of it all, the failure of Samson to launch successfully into this world. You actually don't need to go further than Samson's very first line of dialogue to see that he has issues. He notices a Philistine woman and he demands of his father and mother, get her for me as a wife. And while his father Manoah has an objection, Manoah quickly caves to Samson's repeated request, get that for me because she is the one that pleases me. On so many levels, this is positively not a healthy dynamic. A coddled child who, despite being capable of heroic acts, is strangely unable to lift a finger when it comes to his own life. He demands not just that his parents acquire a wife for him, but that they do so from the daughter of the sworn enemies of Israel, a paradox of psychosexual rebellion and dependence that not even Freud could fully explain. What is clear, as argued convincingly by the Bible scholar Stephen Wilson, is that all of Samson's deeds, romantic, heroic, and otherwise, occur with the backdrop of Samson's inability to set out independently in this world away from his parents. When Samson refuses to answer the riddle to the Philistines, his defense, strangely, is how could he when he has yet to even tell his parents? When he tears the animal asunder, the biblical narrator is quick to inform the reader whether his parents knew about Samson's deeds or not. When Samson scoops the honey from the lion for his Timnite bride, dripping as it is with sensual overtones, Samson first goes home to share the honey with his parents and act akin, in Wilson's words, to a young man purchasing roses and chocolates for a romantic rendezvous and then promptly offering them to his parents. the man-child he is, Samson's first marriage unsurprisingly fails, and after he kills 30 Philistine men in rage, he goes home to mommy and daddy. Even in death, as he's brought down the Philistine temple on himself, Samson remains tethered to his parents. His corpse is placed significantly in his father's tomb. Samson's life is that of a man-child, a failed maturation process resulting in an impetuous, obstinate, careless, and airless figure, totally lacking in self-restraint. Samson is anything but his own man, anything but a heroic figure. He's the anti-hero, a morality tale for ancient Israel and all of us in this room about how not to parent, on what not to do. And it's hard to tell where to point the finger. Who's to blame? Did Samson's parents hold on too tightly? Was Samson too much of a mama's boy? I'm really not sure. But what I do know is that all of the misfortunes of the Samson story, at the foundation of them all, is the fact that Samson never actually left home. He failed to take agency for his decisions. He abdicated the promise of his potential. He proved unable to build relationships of meaning with men or women, and he lacked the tools to cope with failure when it happened. If you pause to think about any of our biblical heroes, each one of them, either on terms of their own choosing or more often than not of their own choosing, differentiated themselves from their household of origin. Abraham smashed the idols of his father's workshop. Following his near death on the altar, Isaac charted his own path. Jacob fled Esau. Rebekah left the house of Bethuel. Rachel and Leah broke with the house of Laban. Moses ran from the house of Pharaoh. Esther was actually orphaned before we met her and then entered the palace of Ahasuerus. The list goes on and on. You give me a biblical hero and I will show you where they self-differentiated from their household of origin. You show me someone who never left home, Joseph's brothers, Lot's wife who turned to a pillar of salt, or this week's figure of Samson, and I'll show you someone not to aspire to be like. From the very beginning, literally, Genesis chapter 2, to leave your father and mother, that is the marker, the starting point of being a mature adult. I am totally panicked at the thought of my child leaving home, and I know that she must do so. She must do so because it is natural to do so. She must do so because, ready or not, it is time to do so. She must do so because when I think of who she is and I think about all the stupid things I did when I was her age, I know that she is head and shoulders above where I ever was and probably still am. She must do so because I did so once myself, and I know that it's been the combination of my failures and successes, heartaches and joys, which I had to negotiate myself, that made me and you and all of us who we are today. Most of all, she must do so. She must leave home because I want her to be her own person, to become that unique individual that has hitherto never existed in this world, the individual who can only be if I am willing to let go of her and she of me. The world is full of people trying to be people who they are not. It strikes me as a basic minimum of parenting to let our children grow to become the people that they are meant to become. And so I woke up yesterday at some ungodly hour in order to take that kid to the airport, hoping to squeeze a final hour before her summer program, before she leaves for a gap year, before she leaves for college. It's not really happening all right now. And as we pulled up to the terminal, I nuzzled up to the curbside baggage because I wanted to make absolutely sure that her luggage got on the flight. And I gave her a kiss and I told her I love her, and before pulling away, sent her a message saying, please text when you get through security. And about 10 minutes into my drive back into the city, a pop-up appeared on my dashboard and Siri's voice announced a text received from Lucy Cosgrove. Through security, and then, Would you like to reply to Lucy Cosgrove? Well, Siri, that's a silly question. Of course I want to reply. But this time, I didn't. I hope she lands safely. But she's got to figure it out for herself. It's hard to give up control. It's hard to let go. But I guess that's what we must do for us, for our children, and for that hoped-for day when our children will grow to become the adults that they are meant to be. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul.